From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, lawmakers hold a day of drug policy discussion. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on the U.S. attorney continuing his ethics investigation where the Moreland Commission left off, and we'll take a look at the state of the air around New York. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. It was a day of drug policy discussion in Albany this week as lawmakers held a forum on legalizing marijuana, proposed bills to combat heroin addiction and overdoses, and made progress toward a medical marijuana program. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Sponsors of a bill to legalize marijuana held a forum. It in part focused on the nuts and bolts of how to implement a system that would permit sales and impose taxes on the drug. Lawmakers heard from the former deputy commissioner in the New York City Comptroller's Office. He studied the cost and benefits of permitting marijuana to be regulated, sold, and taxed. Ari Hoffnung told lawmakers that more than $400 million in revenues could be generated each year from an excise tax as well as new sales taxes, and he says the market could be large, as many as 2 million people. Hoffnung says $31 million could be saved in costs for arrests and court procedures in New York City alone if it's legal to possess an ounce or less of marijuana. But he says he would support the bill, sponsored by Senator Liz Krueger, even if it were revenue neutral.
Because it would eliminate the unnecessary human costs of marijuana prohibition in the form of arrests that disproportionately impact our Black and Latino communities. Moreover, this bill would finally end decades of senseless policies that criminalize the harmless recreational choices of more than 2 million otherwise law-abiding New Yorkers.
Advocates believe that legalization for recreational purposes may still be a few years off, but a bill to allow medical marijuana is gaining ground. A new version of the legislation has been introduced that would limit the total number of diseases that would be eligible for treatment in an attempt to make it more palatable to some Senate Republicans, who so far have been reluctant to sign on. Senate Independent Democratic Conference Leader Jeff Klein, who co-leads the Senate along with the GOP, says he believes there is enough support now to pass the measure.
If we have enough votes to pass it, both Democrats and Republicans, that's something that we should put on the floor and make happen before the end of session.
Governor Cuomo has proposed a more limited pilot program for hospitals in New York, but Cuomo has said if the legislature passes a larger bill, he'll take a look at it. Meanwhile, heroin addiction and overdoses are a growing problem in New York. Senate Republicans are holding hearings on the matter, and Democrats in the chamber are proposing a slate of new bills. They include ways to make it easier for first responders and family members of addicts to get access to the antidote drug naloxone that can counteract a potentially fatal overdose. They also propose tough public service announcements and a social media campaign to warn children of the dangers, as well as stiffer penalties against major drug dealers, says Senate Democratic Leader Andrea Stewart Cousins.
There's a crisis taking place in cities and towns, in neighborhoods throughout New York State. Heroin and opioid abuse and addiction is a scourge that's impacting communities of all backgrounds, races, and income levels. Within the last decade, opioid use, particularly among young adults, has risen at an alarming and unacceptable rate. And state government, frankly, has not done enough
Senate Republicans hope to complete a report from a series of hearings in a few weeks and pass legislation before the session ends. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, you had the co-chair of the Working Families Party for an interview on your Capital Connection program this week. That's Karen Scharf. She's also the executive director of Citizens Action. And of course, they're on the hot seat when it comes to whether they're going to support Governor Cuomo for the next election or run their own candidate.
Well, I have a prediction, and I'll make it in just a second. But let's go back and just take a look at the newest polling that's out that shows if Cuomo runs right now, he wins by a massive 30 points over Astorino. Something that Astorino told us right here didn't bother him because that's the way he started when he ran as a Republican in 2-1 Democratic Westchester County, and still he won, and he won twice, and he won overwhelmingly. So he says he can do it. To many, it seems like a suicide mission, but that's the great thing about American democracy. You can run, and sometimes strange things happen. Anyway, if, on the other hand, says this poll, the Working Families Party, which is to the left of center, offers another alternative, not even named, then Cuomo's lead gets cut down to 15%, and that something like 23% of the electorate say they're going to vote for the Working Families Party. And so the question is, well, then why wouldn't the Working Families Party support Cuomo? Well, they will. And that's my prediction. They will. The party is made up of two groups. One of them is the left progressive group like the Citizens Action group. The second group are the labor unions. And for whatever their reasons, the labor unions, particularly the outside of government labor unions, are supporting Cuomo. Although keep your eye on Michael Mulgrew, who is just settling a huge contract in New York City with Bill de Blasio, is also the guy who ousted the head of the state teachers organization recently. And Mulgrew, it is, I have been told by top people, is really for the re-upping of Cuomo and the nomination of Cuomo without any working party opposition. So I think that what happens is that since the unions are responsible for funding the Working Families Party, even though they may not have all of the formal votes, the people in that party know that if they don't go along, they don't get any money and they're in real trouble. So the Working Families Party, in my view, will support Cuomo by not having a separate candidate.
It's something that affects a good portion of New York, and especially the Albany area, and many of our listeners in Western New York may not know about this, is oil coming through on tanker cars, on trains. And Governor Cuomo, to that end, has written to President Obama urging him to take federal action that would tighten regulations for fuel transportation.
Well, we do see that there have been derailments of oil cars in other parts of the country, and there is the possibility, because there's a huge population in Albany around that area. This is obviously a very sensitive subject. When you say, I'm writing a letter, let's tighten things up, the whole idea is that inevitably there will be something. Something's going to happen. Some oil car is going to go off a track. There's going to be a spill. And if you're a politician, you want to be as far away from that as possible. And you want to say, well, I tried. I wrote that letter. I did what I could. And, you know, when you're a governor, you have a lot of power. So once again, it's not what they say, but what they do. And we'll have to see that, because this is a very sensitive subject. This is a case of something that comes close to what we call environmental discrimination. Those people who have the least are often in areas that are most subject to this kind of degradation of the environment. And if you sort of take a look at it, it is something that will get invoked if something goes wrong.
Well, the top federal prosecutor in Manhattan, Alan Preet Bharara, who sharply criticized Governor Cuomo's shutdown of the Moreland Commission, he is now seeking records from the state's ethics panel.
Well, it's interesting. You'll remember that Bharara, who's a brilliant man, was, I believe, chief of staff for Charles Schumer, the inventor of the Schumich sandwich. And so I got a smell that there may be a little something going on here between the governor who stopped the Moreland Commission in the middle of its work. And I think there's a political aspect to this, but I really don't know what it is yet. But, you know, I'm giving you a little hint here that you might take a look at. But in any case, Bharara is to be respected for saying, what was that all about? How come you started an investigation and you stop it in the middle? Why would you do that?
the Westchester Democrats want to boot Rob Astorino, the Republican candidate from governor, from his executive position in Westchester County because essentially he's campaigning for governor.
Well, he's very popular. And the fact is that in a campaign for governor, I have a feeling that a lot of those Westchester people who voted for him, including a 2-to-1 Democratic registration, are likely to be proud of their guy because he's running for governor. This could hurt you. You know, one wonders where the impetus for this might be coming from. Who would be pushing the Westchester Democrats into all of that? And so you have to think of it because it's just the way that politics operates. Sometimes politicians overplay their hands when they push a little too hard in some of these elections. I mean, do we have to go all the way back to Watergate to remember Nixon was going to win that election no matter what was going to happen? But they had to go bug that Democratic headquarters, and it was over the line. Now, do I think anything illegal is going on here? No. But what they're saying is, you should be here. You shouldn't be running against Governor Cuomo. Well, you know,
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. The American Lung Association released its annual State of the Air report card this week. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports now on who received good grades and who didn't.
Just this past October, the World Health Organization classified outdoor air pollution as a human carcinogen. The longer we fail to take the steps necessary to reduce air pollution, the more of our friends, family members, neighbors, and coworkers we will see suffering air pollution's harmful effects. Air pollution can hinder our ability to breathe, rob us of our ability to enjoy our best quality of life possible, and it can even cut our lives short.
That's Jeff Seiler, president and CEO of the American Lung Association of the Northeast, opening a conference call to discuss the ALA's air quality findings. 9 New York counties received Fs for smog or ozone pollution. Bronx, Chautauqua, Jefferson, New York, Queens, Rockland, Richmond, Suffolk, and Westchester, compared with just 5 in the 2013 report. Michael Sealback is Vice President of Public Policy and Communications for ALA of the Northeast.
8.8 million New Yorkers live in counties with failing air quality. That's double the number of people who are living in counties with failing air back in 2013.
Albany County earned a C for its smog levels, same as a year ago.
4 counties in the state improved their grades for ozone in this year's report, Franklin, Putnam, Rensselaer, and Saratoga, with Franklin and Saratoga receiving A's this year. Utica-Rome made the list of cleanest cities for ozone pollution, which means they had no days during this period of unhealthy levels of ozone pollution.
Sealback called for several steps to improve the air New Yorkers breathe, including protecting the Clean Air Act, and cleaning up coal-fired power plants and wood-burning devices while pushing for adequate funding for states to monitor air pollution.
We must make sure that in a continued tough budget climate, we're not using limited state resources to incentivize the use of dirty technology like biomass combustion. We need to seriously increase the amount of renewable energy sources being used. We need to retire the oldest, dirtiest power plants in the state, especially the coal-fired plants. We must decrease carbon pollution, we must decrease the use of outdoor wood boilers, and we must finally fully implement the state's Diesel Emissions Reduction Act, which has continued to see its implementation stifled.
Sealback reiterated the ALA's stance that New York should not lift the de facto moratorium on hydrofracking until the state can ensure that air quality is not going to be compromised by industrialization. The 2014 report uses data gathered from 2010 through 2012. Los Angeles is listed as having the nation's worst air pollution. Bangor, Maine has the cleanest air of all areas tested. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The Port of Albany has been the focus of a lot of attention lately because of a community debate over the location of a proposed crude oil processing plant. But before the industrial sites and rail yards moved in about 80 years ago, the port was known as Castle Island. Several Capital Region historians believe the island is the site of the very first Dutch settlement in America, Fort Nassau. But nearly 400 years after it was abandoned, its exact location remains a mystery. The Innovation Trail's Jenna Flanagan joined two different local historians to find out what they've uncovered.
Spent nuclear fuel elements in ruggedly built trucks and special railroad cars head toward western New York State.
The West Valley nuclear site, 30 miles south of Buffalo, is the only commercial nuclear reprocessing plant to have operated in the United States. In just 6 years, beginning in 1966, the plant processed more than 700 tons of spent nuclear fuel, generating 660,000 gallons of high-level radioactive liquid. It also accumulated roughly 2.4 million cubic feet of waste in unlined soil trenches.
Each day, nuclear fuel services can process up to 1 ton of spent fuel elements.
But more than four decades after the plant closed its doors, what to do with that waste remains an open question. Cleanup of the site has been underway since 1980, and to date, it's cost the state and federal governments more than $2.9 billion.
There are clearly legacy issues from those early generation of nuclear facilities.
Mike Weber of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission says facilities like the West Valley site operated when nuclear regulators were on a steep learning curve.
In fact, we learned from that legacy and put in place regulations that are much more stringent and well-informed for the current generation of facilities.
When those evolving regulations saw the site quickly fall below code, West Valley's commercial operator bowed out, leaving responsibility for the site with the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority. And according to Ed Lyman of the Union of Concerned Scientists, the reprocessing operations left behind a host of issues.
This is actually the worst thing you can do for nuclear waste. When you process spent fuel, you increase the hazard and the likelihood that you can have accidents or releases into the air or water, and you generate various types of waste, each of which is very difficult to deal with.
The majority of waste reprocessed at West Valley came from federal facilities, and in 1980, the U.S. Department of Energy became responsible for solidifying the liquid byproduct. They utilized a process called vitrification, which resulted in 275 barrels of highly radioactive glass. But some contaminated sludge remains, and along with the buried waste at the site, it's seen as a risk for the surrounding environment.
It needs to be removed. And unfortunately, wherever it goes is going to be a sacrifice area because there's no way to contain nuclear waste that lasts hundreds of thousands and millions of years.
Diane DiRigo, a member of the Nuclear Information and Resource Service, says potential contamination of the local water table is now the biggest concern.
Nuclear waste was brought here and buried in unlined soil trenches, surrounded by streams that cut and drain into Cattaraugus Creek, which gushes into Lake Erie, right below where Western New York, Erie, and Buffalo get their drinking water supply.
NYSERDA and DOE officials say the natural presence of thick clay at the waste site prevents harmful radioactive isotopes from leaching into the environment. They test soil, milk, vegetables, and even the meat from roadkill in the surrounding area on a regular basis to make sure contamination isn't leaching off-site. However, according to DiRigo, it's estimated the site will erode into the Great Lakes in the next 150 to 1500 years regardless. And she says increasingly severe weather events mean the waste could be exposed sooner than predicted.
It's eroding slowly, but we could have big incidences where more could come. We can't wait for this stuff to leak out. It has to be dug up and stored retrievably, monitored, and maintained.
The 2011 disaster at the Fukushima plant in Japan prompted a full review of safety in U.S. nuclear facilities. And while some changes were required, the NRC deemed that the current arrangement for fuel storage at most commercial plants was safe. But Ed Lyman of the Union of Concerned Scientists says that conclusion is symptomatic of the gaps in nuclear regulation worldwide.
Part of the systemic problem that made Fukushima possible was the fact that regulators in the nuclear industry simply believed that something like that could not happen.
And Lyman agrees that increasingly severe weather events could pose future threats to U.S. facilities, too.
The problem, as always, is how safe is safe enough. And we have concerns that the measures that the NRC is requiring don't go far enough to really protect the U.S. power plants against the whole range of disasters that they might face.
Nuclear fuel can remain radioactive for hundreds of thousands of years, and that's how long it needs to be safely stored, according to Lyman. The NRC's Mike Weber says the nuclear waste, which remains long after many plants have closed, is an issue the NRC is actively considering.
The question arises, well, gee, what about if you had to store the fuel beyond the licensed lifetime of the nuclear power plant, because there perhaps would be a delay in the availability of the repository? What then? What are the environmental impacts associated with that?
NYSERDA and the DOE are facing that very issue at West Valley. They're currently working to decontaminate and decommission the site in two phases. Phase one is already underway and includes multiple studies intended to inform final phase two decisions scheduled for 2020. But for Joanne Haymeister, a member of the Coalition on West Valley Nuclear Wastes, after being involved in the issue for nearly four decades, the endless parade of studies is getting tiresome.
There have been far too many studies, and they do cost money. And I feel as though the money that they are spending for additional studies could be used to do waste remediation at some level. It's just my view. I'm impatient about getting things done. I'm not going to see this place cleaned up. I can't live to be 150, you know. I just can't.
NYSERDA director for the West Valley site, Paul Bembia, says the studies are necessary to make sound decisions for the site. And the 2020 timeframe is, in his view, an aggressive one.
Some of the issues that we're addressing right now through the Phase 1 studies are some difficult scientific and technical issues. NYSERDA and DOE have brought in some of the top experts in the country to help us with those, and that scientific process is just going to take a little bit of time.
And Bembia says decommissioning activities are already taking place. But even if Phase 2 decisions support the removal of all waste from the West Valley site, there's nowhere for it to go. And Ed Lyman of the Union of Concerned Scientists says there'll be no solution at the national level for several decades.
The current law says spent fuel will be buried in Yucca Mountain. And so until that law is changed, nothing can really happen. And in Congress, there's very little action or appetite for dealing with nuclear waste legislation.
Mike Weber at the NRC says the issue is no longer a scientific one.
The staff did not identify any technical or scientific reasons that would lead us to conclude that you could not license the Yucca Mountain repository.
But the issue has become highly politicized.
It's really now in the hands of the policymakers.
In the absence of a national solution, local resident Joanne Haymeister says West Valley could still be a valuable case study.
It is so complex, so it's the worst-case scenario. They could make some inroads into treating waste using West Valley, like a pilot plant. I think they've missed the boat on that.
In Rochester, I'm Kate O'Connell for the Innovation Trail.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1418. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.